The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Coming up on Life Today, host of the television program Marriage Today, Jimmy Evans explains how we can break free from the chains of our painful past.
When you don't deal with pain, it doesn't go away, it accumulates. And I call it the hurt pocket. Jesus, what he was saying is, blessed are those who bring their pain to me, I'll heal it.
Completely removing and resolving any painful event in your past that is keeping you from your God-given destiny, next.
Again for joining us. I hope you watch us every day of the week. I'm Betty Robinson, and this is James.
And we need some marriage counseling, so we brought in a marriage counselor to help us. I mean, we'll be married now. We're married 51 years, and so, you know, we celebrated the 50th anniversary, and so we made it another one. Thanks for your prayers. But we bring in Jimmy Evans in, and maybe really help us, maybe add another few months along.
Yeah, I gave him a few suggestions.
And he wrote a whole book. Now, really, this is, I think it really hit home with us because the title of it is When Life Hurts, and it does hurt. As a matter of fact, Betty wrote one of the encouraging endorsements of the book referencing hurt that we never thought we would ever experience. Would you welcome Jimmy Evans? Jimmy, good to see you. First of all, I want to thank you for caring about what matters to people and the fact that they do struggle, but we find some answers and you're anxious to share them. And you've been willing to speak out of your own, let's say, feebleness and failure, mm-hmm. and what you've learned. And what inspired you to write this one?
Well, you know, when I've done seminars over the years and spoken to congregations, one of the questions that I ask sometimes, and this interests me, is I ask people, how many of you would say that something devastating has happened to you in your life? And I ask that question, and immediately 90% of the hands go up. Is devastating. It's not just hurtful. It's not just pain. But what you guys experienced, you know, with Robin and many other people experience, maybe not on that level, but just the death of a loved one that's untimely, a tragedy in your life, you know, the abandonment as a child, abuse as a child, divorce, rejection, whatever it is, life hurts. And that's the first emotional reality of life is it, no one's going to get out of here without being hurt. The second reality, and the reason that I wrote the book, is to help people to understand when you don't deal with pain, it doesn't go away, it accumulates. And I call it the hurt pocket, that there's a place in our hearts where unresolved hurt goes and it stays there. And see that there's this, we don't know how to, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I didn't know how to deal with pain. And, you know, when I married Karen, she knew how messed up I was and she kept asking, well, when that happened, didn't that devastate you? And I would say, no. But well, one of the reasons I was so messed up was all that pain was inside of me. And you know, there's the old saying that says, time heals all wounds. Time heals nothing. In fact, I think things get worse over time, emotionally.
If they don't get healed.
If they don't get healed. Mm-hmm. They fester. And that hurt pocket, another reality of life is, the more that hurt pocket gets filled, the more it compromises us mentally, emotionally, relationally, spiritually. And this was my experience growing up, and I had some really, truly devastating things happen to me as a child that I don't talk about. Just, it wouldn't be appropriate. But I talk about one thing that happened in my life that formed my life in a great way. And when I was growing up, you know, I have two older brothers, Damien and Lucifer. And we all went, they're Randy and Mike, but they deserve those names, trust me. If you know them, they're part of my
family. He loves you guys. Yeah.
But we all went to the same schools. We went to an elementary school, all of us did, and so I was the youngest. So when I got to the sixth grade, which was the last year in elementary school, they changed the boundaries. And, you know, all my friends were there, all of our friends were there. And so, but we didn't move. I mean, we lived in the same home. They just changed the boundaries and I had to go to another school. So, you know, that was kind of a hard deal. And the first day of school, I actually went to my old school and tried to fit in, and they shipped me off to the new school. So, you know, so I had a kind of a tough year in that new school. And so, but at the end of that year, they changed the boundaries again. And they said, you can go back to your old school now, the middle school that all of my friends are going to. I said, that's fantastic. So I played sports. I played all sports, basketball, football, track, all that. So I played all sports, had a great time, you know, kind of rekindle all the old friendships. Then in the ninth grade, they changed boundaries again. We had never moved.
It was all just because of you.
Yeah, yeah. I think they singled me out. But you know, when you're a kid and you're building relationships and everything, so they told me that, you know, I had to go back to this other school. My parents went down and argued with them. They said, well, okay, he can stay at that school in the ninth grade, but he can't play sports. So I was an athlete. All my friends were athletes. So my parents told me, they said, well, you can either go to the new school or you can stay at this school, but you can't play sports. And I said, well, I'm going to stay with my friends. So I stayed there and I watched the sporting events. And I want everybody to know this is not the worst thing ever happened to me, but this is something that changed my life.
Sure.
Is that I was at this football game watching my friends play, and there was a vending truck at the end of the field. And so during the game, I thought, well, I'll go down and get a Coke. So I walked down to get a Coke, and while I was down there, the cheerleaders from the other team started talking to me. I knew them, and they walked over, started talking to me. So I got my Coke, walked back over, watched the game, went home. So I came to school the next day, and there was a note when I got to school for me to go to the principal's office. So I went to the principal's office, and I didn't, at this point, I was not fond of teachers and administrators and things because they're the people that kept shipping me back and forth. So I went to the principal's office, and he said, bend over, Evans, you're getting swats. And I said, excuse me? And he said, yeah, bend over, you're getting swats. I said, why? He said, you know why? I said, I don't know why. And he said, going down that vending truck yesterday. I said, at the football game? He said, yeah, you went down that vending truck. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, those cheerleaders came up and talked to you. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, when they did, you stepped on the other side of that vending truck. That's the other side of the field. That's against school rules. And bend over, you're getting swats. And I said, sir, I didn't go to the other side of the field. He said, that vending truck was in the middle of the field. When you took one step past it, you were on the other side of the field, and you bend over. So he gave me swats. And I had been in the office a few times before. Let me just say that. But it broke my spirit.
I can understand.
They had been messing.
It's making me mad right now.
Well, they had been just messing with me. That's the way I felt as a kid.
Sure. That's a dumb rule, in my opinion.
Well, when that happened, they broke my spirit. And so I was going back to my class, and I thought, I'm going to pay these people back now. They're on my list. So I got back to class, and my friend said, Evans, where'd you go to the office for? And I told them. They said, gosh, that's unbelievable. I said, hey, let's have a contest. And they said, what? And I said, let's see who can get the most swats this year. And I'm in it, and I won. I was in trouble all the time. Now, listen, at that day is when I started drinking, smoking, fighting, and being immoral. That day. And because I got in
high. That breaks my heart. It's a lousy rule. Well, but in the way they handle it, how it hurts you breaks my heart.
Well, it changed.
And by the way, I appreciate rules and good boundaries.
Yeah, and teachers and administrators have a tough job, and they were just trying to do theirs. But a little kid was getting shuffled around and frustrated and all that. Sure. But I remember I was in high school and I was really rebellious. I was still an athlete in high school and everything. But I remember one day I said to myself, when did I become a bad kid? I wasn't a bad kid. It was that day. And so the rest of the year I was in trouble all the time. And the principal, who later joined my church, I thought he was seeing Jesus or something. But he joined my church. But he saw me in the hallway, and he said, if you see my face one more time, you won't make high school. Well, then I got to high school, and they were, you know, it was the same kind of a deal. But the accumulated pain in me compromised me.
That was that pocket you're talking about.
That's right. Well, when Karen and I got married, I loved her to death, but I was such a mess. And she kept exploring in there, saying to me, Jimmy, didn't that hurt you when this happened? Didn't that hurt when this happened? Another thing that, you know, kind of shaped my personality was My dad never came to an athletic event. Wonderful guy, and I know that he loved me, he had his own issues that he was dealing with. But I remember sitting being in a football game, looking on the sideline, fantasizing that other boy's dad was my dad. You know, you know what that's like, James. And I would sit there and look at that, and Karen said, didn't that devastate you? And I'd say, no. Well, it devastated me. Mm-hmm. But since I didn't know how to...
Do you think people get that dishonest over their pain pockets?
Yeah, because the thing is, if you go through that door, it's so painful if you don't know how to deal with it. And I didn't. I just didn't want to open that door. And she knew I was in denial. But the other reality is we all deal with pain. See, everybody deals with their pain, whether they deal with it right or wrong. And I use the family of David, King David, because David was his family was highly dysfunctional. And David had tremendous pain. A lot of people say, well, what was David's pain? Well, it started with, out of eight boys, Jesse, his father, had eight boys. And when Samuel the prophet came to his home to anoint a king, he wasn't even considered. He was the only one that his father thought he could never be king. Mm-hmm. So he kept him in the sheep pen. Then his brother, when he came to the battle line, his brother rebuked him. He didn't have a positive role model in his life. King Saul, after he killed Goliath, tried to kill him. Mm-hmm. So David didn't have a positive role model in his life, and he was used to sitting by himself, writing psalms and, visiting with the Lord. But his family, you look at David's family, the way that they dealt with pain. And there's three ways that people deal with pain when you don't deal with it properly. You medicate it, you motivate it, or you meditate it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Medicating means you drink, you take drugs, sex. You do something that feels good, that for the minute makes pain go away. Well, see, David had sexual problems. His family, the boys in his family, had sexual problems. Solomon had 1,000 wives, and you have problems when you have 1,000 wives. 200 or 300 wives is not a problem. 1,000, that's a problem. So, but David, remember, had multiple wives, and Bathsheba came along. He already had multiple wives. And he not only slept with Bathsheba, and he had scoped her out, So as soon as her husband went to battle, he brought Bathsheba over. Then he killed her husband. And his addiction was to the point that multiple wives couldn't satisfy him, and he would go to the point of murdering someone to cover it up. Mm. See, the issue is never the issue. To an alcoholic, alcohol is not the issue. To a drug addict, drugs aren't the issue. Pain's the issue. And when a person goes to Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing they say is, fess up. Talk about that pain. Mm-hmm. They have these T-shirts that says, denial is not a river in Egypt. Mm-hmm. You've got to stop mm-hmm. denying the pain, because the reason that you're medicating, the reason that you're looking for something that feels good is just for this moment, it makes my pain go away.
Do you think people are not aware that they have that pain pocket, though? You seem like you were aware something was going on, and yet when Karen would ask you, you'd say it's not, and no, I don't have it. Do you think that these pockets of pain are blind spots to people, or you think they know it and they're just holding on to it and they don't want to talk about it? What's the deal?
Well, there are meditators. A medicator is in denial. Okay, they literally have shoved it back. Mm-hmm. It's like in the basement. The pain's in the basement, and they're trying to keep doing something that makes that keep it at bay. Mm-hmm. But they are in denial. But the meditators, like Absalom. See, Absalom was a good kid. And his brother violated sexually his sister. His half-brother violated his sister. And David did nothing about it. See, Absalom didn't start out being this guy trying to kill his dad. Absalom started out as a good kid. But his sister was raped. And then David did nothing for a couple of years. Never had a family meeting. Never addressed anyone, not an apology, not a trial or anything. So finally, when he kills his half-brother Amnon, it's been after a couple of years, nothing being done. Then he has to flee to another country. David does nothing. There has to be this little drama that goes on to get Absalom back. Then Absalom comes home, sitting out the back door of the palace. David won't talk to him. Finally, he has to burn down a field to get somebody to come talk to him. Then he becomes Absalom. And Absalom's a meditator. And this is a person who's stewing on it. They've been thinking about it forever. For these people, they're not in denial. They live in their pain every day. These people are mad. They know exactly why they're mad. They remember everybody that made them mad, and they don't forgive.
So that pain grows.
You bet. Yeah. An angry drunk is a medicator and a meditator. They're medicating and meditating at the same time. Well, then there's the motivator. See, Solomon was a motivator. See, Solomon had to kill his brother to become king. And you say, well, why would Solomon have pain? His parents were David and Bathsheba. He was like on the front page of the National Enquirer every week. So Solomon had this, his family was highly dysfunctional, had to kill his brother to become king. All of these things, well, what did Solomon do? He never stopped. He was the ultimate overachiever. in the book of Ecclesiastes, at the end of it, he says, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this. He just lists all of his accomplishments. He says, it's vanity and striving after wind. See, because when you stop, that's when the ghosts show up. When you're a motivator, and this is what I was, with the pain in my life, I didn't medicate it, and I wasn't angry. I couldn't stop. I didn't know why I couldn't stop. As a pastor, I couldn't stop. And I could talk to God about business. I could talk to God about the church, my family, all those kind of things. But see, God, that book, Boundaries, God does, has never read that book. Because he comes right up in the middle of your cereal bowl, puts his finger in it, and stirs. He wants to talk about what he wants to talk about, and he doesn't small talk. God doesn't talk about the weather, doesn't talk about that kind of stuff. He wants to talk about the inside of us. And what I knew about God is if I ever got quiet in the presence of God, he would bring those things up. Mm. And Karen kept telling me, you've got pain in there, Jimmy, that hadn't been dealt with. And I kept telling Karen, no, I don't. But when I sat down in the presence of the Lord, he would begin to touch those areas of my life. And the fifth emotional reality of life is you'll never resolve pain until you turn it to God. The medicating doesn't work. The motivating doesn't work. The meditating doesn't work. All those things perpetuate the pain in our lives and keep that hurt pocket full. But Jesus said something very interesting, and this is in Matthew 5:4. And Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Now, you guys know you've been all over the world helping people, and you know that there are a lot of people in grief that are not being comforted. Mm-hmm. You know, because when you read that on first glance, it's kind of like, I don't know that I completely agree with that because, you know, blessed are those who mourn for they'll be comforted. Well, let me give you another translation of that or a paraphrase. Jesus, what he was saying is, blessed are those who bring their pain to me, I'll heal it. And see, when you come to God and you're honest and you say, Lord, this is what these people did to me. And there are people watching right now that have had such devastation in their lives. It's unbelievable. The abuse that they've been through. You guys help people who are in the sexual trafficking, things like that. It's unbelievable. The people that you're helping. Mm-hmm. I mean, thank God for you guys and thank God for the work that you're doing because these people's lives are being devastated. And the only way that they can ever deal with the devastation in their lives is Jesus Christ.
You know, Jimmy, the love of God is the answer to the pain. He's the healer. He's the one that overwhelms that whisperer that keeps us down and trapped in denial or whatever you're doing, medicate or meditate or motivate, whatever it is. But now I want you to listen to this very real situation. And I'm going to tell you about a miracle. And you're going to get to be a part of a lot of them. And with all my heart, I think you're going to want to be. Watch and listen.
Words. They can inspire. They can abuse. For a young child, there may be none more shocking, more disorienting, and painful than the four words 15-year-old Lena heard. You have been sold. How can the heart or mind of a little girl even process what that means?
ខ្ញុំ ញុំធ្លាប់គិតទុកថ្ងៃនោះគូពីវាមកដល់សាក់មានមេបុណ្យឲ្យគូចាប់ឲ្យគូចាប់គាត់មករយញុំហើយគូចាប់ញុំបាទ
No, boy, then let me just tell you something. Because of people like you, we got her. And we got her away from there. And it's a great risk for the missionaries. And we have to spend a lot of time protecting them. It's one reason, Betty, we must build a safe house for areas in Cambodia and places like that, and be able to take them where we don't put them in with the orphans because of what the extremities of what they've come out of. We've taken a lot of the children that are headed to be sold. Parents will let these predators take their children because they tell them they're going to take them and train them and give them a good job, and they'll send money back to the family. But they never see them again. And the story she told, Betty, it's typical.
It really is, James. And as I listen, it just breaks my heart. And I can't even imagine a mother selling her child to get money, you know, but they're desperate. The parents are desperate, too. A lot of times they're lied to, and they're said, we're going to take this child and give them a good education, and we're going to take care of them.
That's normally the case.
Yeah.
They normally lie to them.
But this little girl, she was so hopeless, and there's so many more like her. She thinks, why me? Why me? What did I do to deserve this? And we can be an answer to those questions because we know who it is that loves her and holds her. And God wants to use us to reach out to precious little children like this. There's so many more of them. To give them a place that they can come and say and know that they are safe, James. And they have a hope of life and living. And she so desires to have a good home and a good family that she won't be afraid anymore.
Well, she's actually asking, how is it that some people have a good one? And she's saying it with a hopelessness that there's no way I could. But the fact is, because of God's love, she meets a family of faith and love and God. And that really is exactly what happens. And I've got to say to all of you who watch us, I don't care what country you're watching us or what state, you have made it possible to rescue girls like that. That girl we've rescued, she's becoming a miracle. And it's my hope that you'll see in another year or so a testimony of where she is. And I'm telling you, we could spend years showing you those testimonies. Here's the issue a lot of times. When we show you the positive, people just start rejoicing, and then the process of help will stop. But just understand, we're going to keep bringing some of those back. We've been doing it because we know you rejoice and say, let's do it again. Well, here's what I'm asking you to do. I want you to reach out and dial that phone number. People are calling right now to be prayed with and for. But I want you to call and say, I'm going to help rescue. $128 will rescue one of those girls or a child that's about to be sold. And that's the average cost. We've got a group of viewers and friends who said we will match what people give. That's how much we believe in this cause and this need. So you give $128, it's double. We've rescued two. $64, it'll be double. You may say, I wish I could rescue one. Now $64, it'll be matched. You can. But remember this too. We've got to build a safe house. We've got a life center in Cambodia. We need a safe house. The situation is such that we need to bring women like that in. Not in with the little children and others because of what's happened around them. Not because of their problems, just what they've been through. It'll traumatize the children that we're rescuing before they get trapped. We need a safe house. It's going to cost about $350,000. Wouldn't it be wonderful if 350 people watching say, I got 1,000. I don't know what you can do. You might be able to do more than that. All I'm asking you to do is whatever you can. Any gift you make, we're going to send you some gifts to bless you. A beautiful devotional guide, a beautiful side-by-side Bible, if you'll help us rescue one of those children. Please, go online, lifetoday.org, or dial that number and make the very best gift you can so we can share life with those who are desperate, just like that precious girl you heard. Thank you so much for doing it.
Human trafficking. It's impossible to believe, but at this very moment, innocent children, many very young, are being sold and forced into sexual slavery and exploited in every way imaginable. And someone must save them. With your help today, we can reach, rescue, and restore their hope for a better future. And now, a miracle opportunity of a matching grant means your gift of $128 to help rescue a child will be matched to help rescue two children. Your $64 gift will be matched to help rescue one child from the horrors of human trafficking. This year, with your help, we also hope to build a safe house in Cambodia where young rescued girls can find safety, loving care, and direction for a new life. The cost of this safe house is $345,000. With your gift, please request My Daily Gift, a beautiful new devotional describing the great love of God who treasures you more than you can imagine. With your gift of $128, which today will help rescue two children, you'll receive the Side-by-Side Bible, which includes the easy-to-read New International Version and the Amplified Text with its additional words and insights. Finally, please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,000 to help establish the safe house in Cambodia. And you may request our 2014 commemorative glass sculpture, The Blessing. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I do want to mention also that we will gladly send you Jimmy Evans's book, When Life Hurts, and boy, it does so often. And I think what he reveals and shares is so helpful to find the healing. And we'd love to send it to you if you just help us reach out and heal the hurt in some of these precious, precious people. Most of the time it's girls, but you'd be surprised how many little boys are now being sold and trafficked. It breaks my heart. Jimmy Evans is going to be back with us. He's going to talk to us more about how we deal with pain and the whisperer, the sounds that you hear in the spirit realm that sounds so clear and so convincing, so damaging. Would you join Betty and me in saying thanks to Jimmy Evans for being with us? Look forward to sharing again, Willie. Look forward to sharing. In the bookstores, When Life Hurts, send it to you today if you just help us rescue someone. Thank you so much.
Next week on Life Today, founder of Passion Conferences, Louis Giglio, inspires young people to know Jesus and live for His glory. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.